Dawn Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
Nina, welcome in. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm so happy to be on your show. Thank you.
Absolutely. So, you know, for you, I know that you have kind of turned things upside down with your evidence-based, you know, talking about nutrition and providing the facts. And you've got the big fat surprise, why butter, meat, and cheese belong in a healthy diet. And you've really revolutionized public understanding of dietary fat, exposing, you know, as you've said, the flawed science behind the low-fat diet. And I think not everybody's up to speed. I hope that people will get your books, look you up, because this is so important. And I think we're still learning more about this. And at the end of the day, feeling cheated by even our own officials. So take us through, you know, what you're talking about. And first of all, why this is such a passion of yours. I mean, where did this come from? Is it childhood? Is it something that triggered this, or just your work as an investigative journalist?
I got interested in this really from a journalistic perspective. Mm-hmm. I was assigned to do a story in the early 2000s on trans fats. That ended up being a huge groundbreaking story for Gourmet magazine and landed me a book deal, which I thought originally would be about trans fats. And I really went down the rabbit hole on the whole issue of dietary fat, what we've been taught to obsess about most in our diets, the low-fat diet, good fat, bad fat. I spent 9 years researching for that book, interviewing hundreds of scientists, reading thousands of studies. When I started that book, I was a vegetarian for 25 years I had been. And at the end of it, you can, as you've heard from the subtitle of the book, I had completely reversed my thinking. I was just totally fascinated by the way that the science had been manipulated, influenced by politics, influenced by corporate forces, all of which I document in the book. And what I found out was just a revelation to me. And it took me 9 years because I really didn't believe what I found. I had to prove it and reprove it to myself and be sure that I was right, because it was so radical what I was saying at the time, which was basically the following, which was, we got it completely wrong on good fats and bad fats. The healthy, natural, whole fats that we've been eating for millennia, like butter and, dare I say the word, lard, tallow, those are natural whole fats that we have evolved to consume. And these artificial industrial products called vegetable oils, or we now, as we understand them, seed oils, those are actually, although they do lower cholesterol, mm-hmm. they have never been shown to, if you eat more of those oils, they will not protect you at all from cardiovascular disease or mortality of or cardiovascular mortality. And in some studies, they actually increase your risk of cardiovascular mortality. So we have really gotten this story backwards. Mm-hmm. And that was and then another part of my book, which is that, and we can talk about this as well, which was the almost complete lack of evidence for our federal dietary guidelines, which are enormously powerful. I mean, what kids eat in schools, what's fed in hospitals, what the military gets to eat. I mean, all of that is determined by our national guidelines. And where I have so much compassion for everybody, all your listeners, and me included, because I was overweight as a younger person, and is that we really have been fed the wrong advice. So even if you follow these national guidelines perfectly, you will, first of all, your diet will not get, you will not get all the nutrients that you need for growth, reproduction, optimal health. It's not a diet that supplies all those like vitally important minerals and nutrients. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is it's never been shown. In fact, it's been disproven from demonstrating that it will do anything to reverse obesity, diabetes, heart disease, or any kind of cancer.
And Nina, I'm so thankful that you're saying this, because I've said for years, and I kind of get teased sometimes because people will say, you're an enabler. I'll say, you know what? I just feel like there's something else going on when I talk to people who say, man, I've been so good and I'm just battling, you know, losing weight, and especially post pandemic. And it feels like you're up against this uphill battle. I do want to mention, Nina Teicholz, as we continue the conversation, you do have a PhD in nutrition. You spent the last decade running a small nonprofit as you've been dedicated to trying to just raise awareness about the issue of the guidelines. And so I guess I would say, if you haven't applied already, I would definitely nominate you for a job, you know, within our new administration to say, bring in Nina. I mean, rewrite these guidelines. Is that something you would be interested in?
You're so, you're prescient. I have applied. I have thrown out my name. If you go and check out my Twitter feed, my handle is at Big Fat Surprise. You can see recent tweets on this. Nicole Shanahan endorsed me. And I think, you know, I would love a job at the USDA, which is the lead agency that reviews the science and administers the U.S. Dietary Guidelines for Americans. And I would absolutely love to be in this position. I have just done nothing but over the last 10 years, but prepare for, you know, provide the evidence base for changing the guidelines. I mean, just to quickly mention, I was able to work with Congress to get two reports by the National Academies of Sciences, first ever peer review of the dietary guidelines that came out with really shocking results, including saying that if without changes, the dietary guidelines were not, quote, trustworthy. And those changes that they recommended, there were 11 recommendations, the USDA did not fully make any of them. So, and then I've co-authored papers with some really top nutritionists, including former experts of the Dietary Guideline Advisory Committee. We've published those in really top journals saying, you know, listing out what are the problems with the evidence, the lack of rigorous evidence. One of my papers says, this is a cover story in the BMJ, which said there is a minuscule amount of rigorous evidence to support the current dietary guidelines. So this is all to say, like, I've really worked to establish a series of high-level documents that can be used to argue that we can hit the ground running with reform. Like, we've done the necessary work. We don't have to stop, assess, take 5 years to do that, and then and wait for reforms. I mean, we could really just start this right away.
And so that's just it. That's the question that I had was, you know, you could implement this. It would obviously raise the awareness, because even though you've been around for quite some time trying to advocate this, this would be an incredible platform just to re-educate America. But Nina, would you want to create curriculum? You know, I've long said, why don't we have this kind of, you know, nutrition type guidance? Like, let's say you were able to rewrite these guidelines, but why not have them in our schools? Why not grow gardens and teach kids about all of that? We seem to, you know, have those unhealthy school lunches. You know what I mean? It right. Seems like we should start it at pre-K.
Right. Really an excellent point. And it goes back, unfortunately, to this same dietary guidelines policy that we have. I mean, it is required by law to be mm-hmm. followed by all federal nutrition education programs. And that is exactly why school lunches are so terrible. They're, you know, why they don't have whole milk for kids in school and instead have chocolate and strawberry milk. There are no caps in the amount of sugar that can be fed to kids in those meals.
That's crazy.
The dietary guidelines control K through 12 education on nutrition. That's why, you know, I remember in grade school seeing the little book on, you know, why seed oils are great for you. Or I guess they called them vegetable oils. But that is why the military gets encouraged to eat still a low-fat, high-carbohydrate diet with pasta. And that is why our military has an obesity problem equal to the general population.
Yes.
So, I mean, we really have to fix these guidelines. I know to people who know me, I sound like this broken record because I'm always talking about the guidelines, but they are so powerful. They really are like the North Star for all institutions on nutrition, you know, including medical education. To the extent that they get any doctors, get any training on nutrition, it's the guidelines. So it really, like, that is what has to be changed. It's the ship on top of all of this. It's the lever of power, and mm-hmm. it needs to reflect the best and most current science.
And what about, because I'm looking, you did post about vegan parenting and the vegan diet for children. What's your opinion about that?
You know, I really understand why people are vegans. And as I said, I myself was a vegetarian, but it is de facto a nutritionally deficient diet. There just are nutrients you cannot get from plants. I mean, most notably is vitamin B12, which is intimately involved with neurological development. And, you know, kids with babies born with with levels, very low levels of B12 have the same symptoms of autism. So I'm not suggesting a causal link there, but I'm suggesting that's very disturbing. And there, you know, iron, folate, magnesium, choline, B vitamins. I mean, you just cannot get those from plant foods. They do sometimes exist in plant foods, for instance, like iron and spinach. You know, remember Popeye? That was how he made him so strong. But it turns out that that iron in spinach is not as bioavailable, meaning your body cannot absorb and use it as it is from, say, red meat. It's just like, that's just a fact. Also, very, very hard to get sufficient complete proteins with all the amino acids that you need for muscle building from plants. And plants also come, you know, if you're having, say, quinoa and beans, that's trying to get your protein, that's a huge load of starches or carbohydrates in those meals, which are, you know, really drive what we call insulin resistance, but that's sort of the root cause of all, you know, nearly all chronic diseases. So you're not doing yourself any favors by eating that diet or feeding it to kids, especially. They need those complete proteins, and they definitely need all the vitamins and minerals to grow healthfully.
And so with that said, and I know that you have thanked and praised, for example, RFK Jr. for raising and really elevating this whole issue of especially chronic diseases and the connection, because oftentimes, you know, somebody's diagnosed with especially certain autoimmune diseases, and you're told, oh, it's not your fault. And maybe we should be saying, well, it's the government's fault. I mean, why is it that some of these things don't happen at the record rates? And you look at America, how unhealthy we are in the world. You're drawing a connection.
We are the 60th country in the world in terms of life expectancy. And I heard a statistic that we are responsible for 70% of pharmaceutical profits. I mean, we have a model that emphasizes drugs, devices over healthy foods. That's just the model that has developed in this country, no doubt influenced by the pharmaceutical industry, which has, you know, been instrumental in creating a medical education for doctors where they're just taught to see the symptoms and prescribe the pill to the symptoms. If they don't have a pill or some kind of pharmaceutical product, they don't know how to approach the problem with nutrition, with better nutrition. They don't know how to get to the root causes of these diseases. So we have a lot of unwinding to do in this country to try to develop a healthier approach, really to address the root causes of disease. And I cannot give a bigger shout out to RFK Jr., who really astonishingly, I mean, as you say, I've been working on these issues and speaking on them for a decade, and he single-handedly elevated these issues and to a national stage, which is so important for our country. Yeah. I mean, let's not forget, 38% of kids now have prediabetes, and almost 80% of U.S. adults have obesity or are overweight. And I could go on and on with the statistics. It really is a national crisis, and it undermines our budget. $4.5 trillion is spent on healthcare every year, and some 80-90% of that is spent on these chronic diet-related diseases. It impacts our military. We can't get enough military recruits because there's an obesity problem among our youth. I mean, in every area, it impacts all of us. And as you said, you know, our kids go to school and eat these lunches that are really setting them up for a life of disease and sugar addiction. And that is, we as a nation we should not stand for that. So I could not be more delighted that this is now an issue for the national conversation.
Thank goodness. And as far as it goes, though, you know, we do have, I mean, some of this stuff had to go through Congress. How could our, I don't know, all of us, our government, everybody in government, so either we believe that they were just obtuse, ignorant, whatever, or that they were lobbied and looked the other way. Is there an opportunity for any in between?
Well, this is what I spent so long documenting. I mean, I think in the 1960s, when guidelines started coming out, first from the American Heart Association, I think scientists earnestly believed that reducing saturated fat and recommending seed oils instead and then a low-fat diet, I think there was an earnest belief in those approaches.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have hesitations about the American Heart Association because they also received a lot of money to launch them from mm-hmm. Procter & Gamble, maker of Crisco oil. And so when they made their recommendation to elevate vegetable oils, that may have been instrumental for them. But as the years have gone on, I have found that it's very clear to me that our government institutions, particularly the U.S. Department of Agriculture, where the U.S. guidelines are based, that they are highly influenced by the food and pharmaceutical industries. I mean, one paper that I co-authored found that 95% of the expert committee that was responsible for our current guidelines had at least one tie to food or pharma. And half of that committee had 30 such ties or more. One member had 152 ties. The U.S. Department of Agriculture also directly has partner relationships with 100 food companies. The very office that runs the guidelines has those partnerships. So I think that we can say, like, this process has been somewhat captured by the industries that it's supposed to regulate. And that really needs to change. I mean, that would be possible, I believe. So, I mean, obviously, you would be up against a lot. Obviously, these are huge and powerful
yeah.
industries, but I think there is like really a desire and among the public there for real change and reform right now.
And so, it reminds me of, I don't know if you ever watched the Lessons in Chemistry show that was streaming, and it was about based on Dr. Elizabeth Zott, and it was they said based on you know a doctor back in the day who was somebody who had a TV show. In the 50s or 60s, and for you know, there was a sponsor, Crisco, so it was a cute show called Lessons in Chemistry. You'd probably love it, but in essence, somebody who was a chemist who ended up with a TV show and realized like something like Crisco and how unhealthy it was, and you know, dealing with all of that. But I just for you, what is then if we look at saying, oh, you should have a low fat diet. So for you, you're saying that we should have a high-protein diet but infused with a lot of spinach and veggies, and it's kind of that basic diet that back in the day in the 60s or maybe 70s was popular. Nowadays, we're told, oh, eating meat is so bad for you, especially beef.
Right. Okay, well, first of all, I'd like to let everybody know that the federal government no longer recommends a low-fat diet. I mean, that recommendation hasn't been made since 2005, and it just never sent out any kind of publicity on that. It
yeah.
did. It kind of like just quietly crept away from that long-time recommendation, but there is no more low-fat recommendation. Similarly, there is no more cap on dietary cholesterol, you know, eggs, shellfish, all that we were told forever to avoid.
Yes.
Another recommendation that was eliminated in 2015, and we've never been told. And that's partly why there's still so much confusion about diet is that really we're not getting clear messaging about what we're even recommended. I mean, as for what is a healthy diet, I wouldn't say high protein. I would say moderate protein and lower in grains and starches and sugars. And, you know, for people with metabolic diseases like obesity and diabetes, those carbohydrates really have to be quite low in order to reverse those diseases or better manage them. Like you really have to even be careful about things like really sweet fruits like pineapples or mangoes. Anybody out there, you should get yourself what is now available over the counter called a continuous glucose monitor. Slap it on your arm and you will see what makes your blood sugar go up.
Yeah.
And that is the most powerful educational tool that I know. So moderate protein and then higher in fat. I mean, good natural fats, the kind that we evolved to eat, that is, I think, a much healthier diet. And it's not just really me saying that.
Mm-hmm.
It's What's important to know, and this is part of the scientific evidence that has been, that is, let's say, to be kind about it, has just not been acknowledged by any of our policymakers, or I actively suppressed. I mean, I have a email that I obtained through Freedom of Information Act from a Harvard professor who was on the expert dietary guideline committee saying, I don't think we should be burying this evidence. And that evidence was on the low carbohydrate diet. And what I want to say is that there are now more than 1,000 papers on randomized controlled trials, which is the gold standard of science, showing that that diet is extremely effective for helping you lose weight, for actually reversing type 2 diabetes, and for nearly all cardiovascular risk factors, reducing your cardiovascular risk score. And it's even shown quite promising, although the evidence is more emerging here, in cancer and in the reversal of mental health issues, including reversing actually schizophrenia and bipolar disorder, which is like never even thought possible, but also dramatically reducing anxiety and depression. So
it's amazing.
The rigorous evidence really exists for that.
Well, Nina Teicholz, I hope you come back. I hope you get the job and you even come back after. You'll be busy in the job. But the book is The Big Fat Surprise, Why Butter, Meat, and Cheese Belong in a Healthy Diet by Nina Teicholz. Thank you so much for being here today. We went a little long, but I think everybody just loves hearing from you. Congratulations on your work. And we certainly wish you Godspeed in your advocacy and in your future. And by the way, on Twitter, it's the little @ Big Fat Surprise. Easiest one I can give. Nina, thank you.
The Dawn Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the Free Odyssey app.